I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
So have you ever picked up a book, you know, one that feels like more than just a story, something that really explores deep human stuff and just stays with you? Well, today we're diving into a book exactly like that, Gabrielle Zevin's incredible novel, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Our mission really is to unpack all its different layers. We'll look at how Zevin uses, interestingly enough, video games to explore big themes, creativity, cultural identity, games as art, and the really messy, complicated nature of human connection. And for this, we're drawing on a great review from Pacific Ties and a pretty thorough summary from SparkNotes AI. They'll help guide us.
Yeah, and it's important to say this isn't just about the story itself, even though it's, you know, fascinating. It's really about what the novel shows us about our own lives. Things like navigating those really intense creative drives, understanding different identities, especially today, and fundamentally, how we find meaning and connection. Zevin uses this unique lens to sort of shed light on the real world.
Okay, so let's start with that title, because it's really evocative, isn't it? Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
It immediately makes you think of Shakespeare, right? Macbeth. Which is, let's face it, pretty dark stuff. All about life being futile, meaningless repetition, signifying nothing.
Really bleak.
But, and this is where it gets really interesting, Zevin completely flips that. She takes that same phrase and turns it into something, you know, optimistic. She frames it around this idea of infinite rebirth. Redemption, even. Like in a video game, you know? Where game over isn't the final word. You can always restart. Try again. Learn.
Right.
There's that quote from Zevin. I think it was highlighted in the Pacific Ties review. She says, "It's tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. It's the possibility of infinite rebirth, infinite redemption. The idea that if you keep playing, you could win. No loss is permanent because nothing is permanent. Ever."
Wow. That's powerful.
It really is such a clever reframing. Oh, absolutely. And what's fascinating, right, is how the games themselves become this huge metaphor for life. Zevin's saying they aren't just escapism. They're actually a way to understand resilience, second chances, how we grow iteratively. You fail, you learn, you try again. It's built into the structure of the novel, too. Characters face these massive setbacks, you know, career stuff, personal loss, betrayal. But they aren't final. They're more like level resets, points where they have to choose to play again using what they learned.
That's a great way to put it, level resets.
Yeah. And you see this so clearly with Sam Mastur, one of the main characters. He deals with this really serious physical disability throughout his life. For him, games are, well, they're liberation. They let him be someone else, somewhere else, without the limits of his body. A place of infinite possibility, infinite rebirth. It changes how we see grief, ambition, everything. It suggests growth comes from playing through the hard stuff.
That connection is so smart. And this idea of continuous play, it's right there with the main characters, the game designer Sam Mastur and Sadie Green. Their whole artistic journey is the core of the book and their relationship. The description, often in love, but never lovers. Wow, that sets up such a complex dynamic from the start. It's their collaboration, this legendary partnership that fuels everything, success, failure, friendship, love, heartbreak, betrayal. A whole spectrum. And they just meet by chance, right? Harvard Square. He's at Harvard. She's at MIT. A cold day. And boom, something sparks.
Serendipity.
Totally.
Yeah.
And leads to their first huge hit game, Ichigo. Makes them famous almost overnight in that early gaming scene. But it's not just Ichigo. The novel follows their whole career, doesn't it? They create other games like Solution, Both Sides, Maple World. You sort of see the evolution of gaming through their work.
You do. And it brings up this really central question Zevin tackles. What actually makes a creative partnership work, especially one that's tangled up with so much personal history, so much emotion, like Sam and Sadie's? She uses them to look at how modern relationships get shaped by things beyond just affection, identity, privilege, power dynamics. They're all in the mix.
Yeah, you see the contrast so clearly.
Absolutely. Sam's background, working class, mixed Korean-American, dealing with his disability. His path is about overcoming all these obstacles, internal and external.
And Sadie?
Well, Well, Sadie's from a wealthy background, but that doesn't make things easy for her, ironically. She's incredibly talented, right? But she's constantly fighting to get recognized. It's a male-dominated industry, especially then, and people undermine her, take credit for her ideas. She's always battling that professional sexism. So you have Sam's physical vulnerability clashing, in a way, with Sadie's struggle against these systemic biases. It creates this real, sometimes painful tension in their bond, shows how power and privilege mess with even the closest collaborations.
It feels very real, that dynamic. Yeah. And speaking of identity, the way Zevin handles cultural representation, specifically Asian American and mixed race identities, that's something that got a lot of praise. And it makes sense given her own background, being Korean and Jewish. She's writing from a place of understanding. You feel that.
Definitely.
Let's talk more about Sam. His experience being mixed race Korean American, raised by his Korean immigrant grandparents in LA's Koreatown.
It adds such a specific, important layer. And there's that line he has, something like, to be half of two things is to be whole of nothing.
Right.
Now, the Pacific Ties Review mentions this might be a logical fallacy, you know, forcing things into only two boxes.
Yeah.
But the emotional truth of it, that feeling of being in between.
Oh, absolutely. It resonates.
It speaks to that feeling many mixed race people or American-born Asians might have, not feeling fully part of either world, that sort of isolation.
Exactly. And connecting that to the bigger picture, Zevin's really giving voice to that in-betweenness, that pressure, sometimes internal, sometimes external. To choose a side, it's a real struggle. And you see it echoed with Mark's Watanabe too, right? Their friend and collaborator, he's Japanese-American.
Yeah.
He talks about a trip to Japan as a kid, saying something like, I didn't feel like anyone understood me. I wasn't Japanese enough, but I wasn't anything else either. Both he and Sam articulate that very specific feeling. Navigating authenticity, belonging.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But what Zevin does so well, and what the review highlights, is she avoids making them token characters. Their ethnicity isn't their entire personality. It's what the review called casual representation. It feels natural. Their identity shapes them, their experiences, their perspectives, of course, but it doesn't define everything they are or do in the story. It just is part of their complex humanity.
That feels so much more authentic, doesn't it? Mm. And speaking of authenticity, her skill in writing about game design, making it accessible even if you know nothing about games, that's pretty amazing.
It really is.
You don't need to be a gamer. She uses the industry language like game engine this or player choice architecture that, but not just as jargon. It becomes part of their creative struggle.
Yeah.
You understand their debates about difficulty curves because they mirror their own life choices.
Yeah, it makes the abstract tangible.
And she weaves in all these references to real games, especially those influential Japanese RPGs and older titles.
Yeah.
Like Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy. They're not just random name drops for gamers. They create this atmosphere, this history that Sam and Sadie are building on. Even if you don't know the games, you feel the significance. Mm-hmm. Their own fictional games, Ichigo, Solution, Maple World, they feel grounded in that evolving world.
Absolutely. And what's really fascinating there is how Zevin actively challenges the stereotypes around video games. She elevates them. She says, look, this is a unique form of art, a form of expression. She shows how games can tackle serious, real-world stuff, explore other ways of being, even provide comfort. The novel touches on things like 9/11, even the recent pandemic.
Right, subtly.
Yeah, subtly but powerfully. Showing how, during those really hard times, games weren't just distraction. They offered connection, community, a way to process things, maybe. A unique kind of solace.
That's a great point.
So this theme really hammers home the cultural weight of video games. Zevin makes a strong case for them being as artistically important, as capable of fostering empathy or challenging us, as any book or film. They're about building, exploring, connecting, not just winning.
Beyond all the creative stuff, though, the book is just so raw about people. Human imperfection. I know some reviews apparently question if the characters are always likable.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of think that's the point. Their flaws make them feel real. Messy, complicated, totally human. You relate to them because they're not perfect.
Exactly. It reflects humanity in its rawest form, as you said.
And you see that rawness most clearly, I think, when they deal with grief.
Yeah.
Specifically after Mark's Watanabe, their friend and partner, dies tragically.
Oh, yeah. That hits hard.
Their ways of coping are just completely different. And the novel digs deep into why. Sam, who lost his mother young, he sort of knows grief. His response is to pour everything into work, into new projects. It's almost how he processes, by creating
a familiar pattern for him.
Right. But Sadie, she just completely spirals, falls into the deep depression, shuts Sam out, loses her passion for the work they built together, she withdraws.
Mm. And this really brings up that crucial question. How do our pasts, our histories, shape how we react emotionally? How we support others, even the people closest to us?
Yeah.
Because Sam and Sadie, despite everything they share, they just cannot understand each other's grief. Sam's need to do something clashes hard with Sadie's need to just stop, be still.
They can't bridge that gap.
No. And that inability to connect in that moment, it basically fractures their partnership. They go their separate ways for a while, professionally and personally. It's not really a character flaw, is it? It feels like an authentic portrayal of how grief can just break things. How two people, even with a deep bond, might be totally unable to give each other what they need in that moment.
It's devastatingly human.
Yeah. It shows their self-destructive ways of grieving, maybe, but ways that feel completely human. Grief isn't neat. It's messy, complex, and it can tear even strong connections apart if you're not careful, or if your histories just don't align in how you handle it. It shows how our past really shapes our capacity for empathy in crisis.
Wow. Okay, so recapping this deep dive, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow really gives us so much. A profound look at creativity, collaboration, the nuances of identity, games as art, and just this incredibly raw, honest look at human emotions, especially grief. It weaves together their work and their lives so skillfully. Just a deeply compelling read.
Absolutely. And ultimately, I think this dive reminds us that life, yeah, it's like a game sometimes, full of challenges, setbacks, moments that feel like game over. But Zevin's core idea, that infinite rebirth, it really sticks with you. It's not just comforting. It's almost a call to keep going. There are always more chances to learn, to grow, to connect, if you just keep playing.
So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you listening? Maybe it's just that powerful reminder, even when things feel final, like you've lost the game. There's always another tomorrow, another chance to play, to find redemption, to connect differently in this greater game of life. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? What games are you playing right now?
Yeah, good point.
Are you ready for that next level?